Welcome to this week's edition of The Green. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. This week we bring you the latest edition of the University of Delaware Journalism Program's speaker series, the Front Page Cafe. Earlier this month, two guests came to the Deer Park Tavern in Newark to discuss the proposed summit between North Korea and the United States. One, Mark Bowden, is a UD professor, author, and national correspondent for The Atlantic, who recently wrote a piece entitled, A Trump-Kim Summit, Why the Hell Not? He was joined by UD Political Science and International Relations Professor Dr. Stuart Kaufman. Delaware Public Media is partnering with the UD Journalism Program to bring you the Front Page Cafe and recorded this edition April 16th. In the first portion of the program, you'll hear Bowden and Kaufman discuss a possible summit and its implications. Later, you'll hear the event's question and answer session. So sit back and enjoy this edition of the Front Page Cafe with Mark Bowden and Dr. Stuart Kaufman.
Thanks for coming. So this is a little primer. I'm sure all of you know most of this already, but Korea was, of course, divided at the end of the Korean War in the early 1950s. And the dynasty created by Kim Il-sung in Pyongyang, North Korea, has thrived while the country itself has sort of withered in the last 70 years or so. While South Korea has built a thriving democracy and one of the strongest economies, not just in Asia, but in the world. The United States, of course, is the important ally of South Korea. And in the past, Russia and China, in the Cold War era, was the primary ally of the North Korean regime. In recent years, relations between North Korea, Russia, and China have become strained, although just in the last day or two, or the last week or two, Kim Jong-un has apparently reached out to China, and there's a thaw going on there. The real problem and the thorny issue with North Korea is that they have built an enormous arsenal. They have a very powerful military. They have most significantly for the region and for the United States, developed nuclear weapons. They've exploded nuclear bombs. And they've been working avidly toward building an intercontinental ballistic missile, which would mean they would have the capacity of delivering potentially a nuclear weapon or a chemical or biological weapon beyond the region itself all the way to the United States. And American presidents, going back to Nixon, have been vowing to prevent this from happening. Back in the Clinton era, it was a vow to prevent North Korea from developing a nuclear weapon. They exploded their first nuclear weapon, I think it was when Clinton was still president, or maybe when Bush was president. They've exploded five or six more since. And they've been testing nuclear missiles, or rather ICBMs, with increasing range in recent years. President Trump, shortly after being elected, vowed via Twitter that North Korea would not be allowed to build these weapons, which, you know, essentially, at least publicly, brought to a head the dilemma faced by the United States. And the dilemma, framed succinctly, is that North Korea possesses nuclear arms, chemical, biological weapons, and the capacity to essentially destroy the city of Seoul, which is the capital of South Korea. Some 25, 26 million people live in the area around Seoul. So any military action against North Korea risks, at least in the first 48 hours or so, the destruction of Seoul. And this has been a check on any sort of military solution to the problem of North Korea for a long time, and is one of the reasons why North Korea wants these weapons, and secondly, why the United States, with all of the power at its disposal, has really been unable to do anything about this. So that's where we stand.
Great. Thanks for that setup, Mark. You said a bunch of things I wouldn't have thought of to mention. So I wanted to start out by mentioning that so we're in this kind of building crisis now. But the fact is that we've seen this movie before. So I want to tell you what happened the last time we saw this movie, because it's got all kinds of lessons in it, which I hope somebody on President Trump's staff is trying to explain to him. In 1985, North Korea signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty, pledging never ever to get nuclear weapons. Unsurprisingly, they immediately started dragging their feet on carrying out all the obligations, especially with regard to allowing access to inspectors to make sure that they weren't cheating. So this dragged on kind of through the years of the first President Bush. But early in the Clinton administration, it became a bigger and bigger issue. And President Clinton, in fact, started threatening to use military force against North Korea, recognizing the horrendous strategic situation that existed. It was true then that North Korea could essentially destroy Seoul. And even then, they had a vast arsenal of chemical weapons, including nerve gases of all kinds. Nevertheless, President Clinton was threatening to use military force to stop North Korea from getting nuclear weapons. The last minute, former President Jimmy Carter flew to Pyongyang, talked to the current President Kim's father, Kim Jong-il, and kind of opened the door to a negotiated settlement, which was signed the next year. So in 1994, they signed something called the Agreed Framework, which was basically a giant bribe. The U.S. And Japan and South Korea agreed to provide huge amounts of fuel oil to North Korea in exchange for them shelving the nuclear reactor that they were starting to build, which would have been able to produce large amounts of plutonium, which you can use to build a nuclear weapon. At first that deal was carried out. North Korea did in fact shelve their nuclear reactor project. They started getting their fuel oil. But then they started testing missiles, right? Exactly the same kind of routine that we're seeing now. First a nuclear weapons test, then a missile test. The missile program became part of the negotiating process. The story is that just as the Clinton administration was ending in December of 2000, they were supposedly very close to a comprehensive deal, but not close enough that President Clinton was willing to commit to actually going to Pyongyang to sign anything. It wasn't quite ready. So he handed the ball off to President Bush, who immediately said, I don't trust the North Koreans. I'm not sure they're carrying out their side of the deal. After which, North Korea stopped carrying out their side of the deal. And so within a couple of years after President Bush taking office, North Korea had, in fact, expanded its testing of missiles and started testing nuclear weapons. So they became a nuclear weapons state as a result of President Bush's hard line. So that's how effective the hard line was. So that's where we're coming from. And there's a long history of, on the one hand, North Korea is willing to talk. They sometimes carry out their agreement, but they're also very capable of lying, cheating, and doing the exact opposite of what one is trying to get them to do, and especially likely to do so the harder they're pushed.
Obviously, what the piece I wrote for The Atlantic, which is why Deborah invited me here, is ran last summer, and it was in response, really, to this challenge that President Trump had made, saying that he would not allow North Korea to build a nuclear-tipped ICBM. And so what I did was I talked to people who had commanded troops in that region of the world. I went spoke to people from South Korea. I spoke to people who had worked on this issue in the State Department and in the Pentagon and academics who had studied this issue to find out what exactly were our military options. And I outlined, I think, four of them. But in order not to go through all four, I thought I would can summarize best by choosing what would be theoretically the best case scenario, militarily. We're talking about military options here. The best case scenario, it would seem to me, would be that we could somehow attack North Korea and Pyongyang, wipe out their nuclear weapons program, defeat them, destroy the regime without them getting off a single shot, basically. We could achieve such incredible surprise that we could wipe out the threat without them delivering anything, which is any, no respectable military-minded person believes that this is even possible. But let's assume that it is, just for argument's sake. This is the best case scenario. We wipe out the Kim Jong-un regime, we destroy their arsenals, we defeat their military. What are we left with? We're left with the largest humanitarian tragedy in modern times. We have the entire country of North Korea without an economy, without a government. I would imagine, given the nature of the weapons involved, that North Korea has nuclear, chemical, biological weapons, there would be a considerable amount of irradiation or contamination in North Korea. It would be leaderless. Someone would have to step in to take control of the situation, or the whole situation in North Korea would descend into chaos. Now, I'll give you 2 seconds to imagine who it was, who it would be that the world would turn to step in, especially if the United States precipitated the attack and wiped out the regime in Pyongyang. So the United States would be saddled, to answer my question, with the responsibility for essentially trying to govern this North Korea. If you thought Iraq was difficult to govern after Saddam Hussein was toppled, imagine a North Korea where people are starving, where there's irradiation. It's a very forbidding country in terms of terrain. It's very mountainous. You would have pockets, no doubt, of loyalists to the Kim dynasty, or who knows what else, scattered throughout the country, in possession of weapons and possibly in possession of chemical, biological weapons, or even a dirty nuclear bomb. So sending American troops over to manage the situation in North Korea would be an order of magnitude greater than anything we've ever attempted in our history. Not to mention that this is all taking place next door to China, which would be not particularly thrilled with the idea of the United States moving in to North Korea, right? So, and this is, I remind you, the best case scenario militarily. All the other cases, in fact, any realistic estimate of what would happen, even though the United States and South Korea are overwhelmingly more powerful militarily than North Korea and could readily defeat their forces, to do so before North Korea could exact an unthinkable cost is virtually impossible. And the big reason for that, as I mentioned, is Seoul. Because even if they were unable to use any of their weapons of mass destruction, North Korea has amassed along the demilitarized zone, just north of the border, sufficient artillery to essentially level the city of Seoul within like about 24, 48 hours. This is conventional artillery. So any military strike on North Korea risks an unconscionable loss of human life. And as I said, even the very best case scenario risks a problem that we would definitely not want to have.
So I want to pick up on what Mark was saying and take my usual role of being, I guess, not Mr., but Dr. Doom and Gloom, and pointing out why even the less optimistic scenario is way too optimistic. North Korea's national security strategy is deterrence. They know that in an all-out war, the United States, together with South Korea, could defeat them. So their strategy is based on creating a situation where the cost of the U.S. trying to do so would be so high that it's not worth it. And by any rational calculation, they have succeeded in setting up that situation. Because in addition to the conventional artillery aimed at Seoul, you have to figure on their short-term missiles armed with chemical weapons. Those are just kind of normal routine parts of the North Korean arsenal. They also have special forces units that are specifically trained also to deliver conventional or chemical weapons throughout South Korea. From my perspective, the most optimistic possible scenario, if the United States tries to start this sort of let's bomb North Korea and get rid of their nuclear weapons sort of strategy, is that the North Koreans immediately respond with missiles armed with chemical weapons aimed at American military facilities in South Korea and Japan, possibly also South Korean and Japanese cities. And the purpose of doing that wouldn't even be the military destruction. It would be to send the message, we could have put nukes on these and we didn't, so stop or else. That's the best case scenario, right? The worst case scenario is, remember, the reason they have this strategy of deterrence is because they have excellent reason for their paranoia. Are they clinically paranoid? Absolutely. But they have got good reason. We take it as just sort of ordinary background noise when some American politician says regime change in North Korea would be a nice thing, right? Well, if you're sitting in North Korea, that sounds like a threat. And in fact, that's the way it's meant. And that's the way everybody in the United States thinks about it. Yeah, it would be great if we could get rid of the regime in North Korea. They're crazy. They're scary. The worst case scenario comes if the North Koreans think that whatever the U.S. is doing is actually the first step towards regime change. Because once they think that's going on, they have no reason for restraint. Remember, I said the restrained version could be you use chemical weapons as a signal that it could have been nuclear, right? If you think the Americans are going to take away all your weapons and then wipe out your regime, you're in a situation of use them or lose them, and they might use them.
And you have to consider that the entire rationale for the Kim dynasty is that the Kim family is capable of protecting North Korea from this inevitable onslaught. And every lesson that every child in North Korea has learned in school from the earliest years is that they're about to be attacked and that they have enemies, the United States premier among them, who are ready to invade at any moment. And that's why, or at least that drives the sort of propaganda of the regime in Pyongyang, and why every threatening move that the United States makes feeds the narrative, essentially, for the Kim dynasty.
That's Mark Bowden and Dr. Stuart Kaufman discussing a proposed North Korea-U.S. summit at the Front Page Cafe, sponsored by UD's Journalism Program and the UD Department of Political Science and International Relations. The Front Page Cafe will continue in a moment with the event's question and answer session. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media.